Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. I am Doug Llewellyn. It's nice to have you back with us. If you've never been here before, you're going to find this very interesting because we do talk with a lot of very amazing people. Today, I think you're going to find this very interesting. We're going to talk to a highly qualified engineer. Engineers do a little bit of everything, as you know, and there are all kinds of engineers. But what's really interesting, and the point that I'm focusing on in this show today, is that there are other avenues for people to use their expertise after they have had a very lengthy career. And that's that really is the point of this discussion today. We're going to be talking to a highly qualified engineer who's had a 45-year career in the field of engineering, and we're going to talk all about that. But he has retired from that active field of engineering, but now he is extremely active and in demand and is very valuable as an expert witness in the legal system to use in court cases to testify with his expert knowledge about the field of engineering, how it can be used in a variety of legal cases that come before judges and juries. It just goes to show you that when somebody does retire from a field, a very active field, it doesn't mean that they're totally finished. There are more avenues for them to use their experience and their expertise, and this is an ideal example of that. Our guest is Alan Werner. His name is Alan Werner. He's in Seattle, Washington. He has a fascinating career. He has an amazing website. You might want to make note of this website. You take it up and you can look at Alan's career and find out, you know, how you can contact him if you are in need of an expert witness in a legal case. And his website is very simply VA:W. And when I say colon, I don't mean spell out the word, but I mean the two dots, the colon, the punctuation, VA:W. And it stands for Value Added by Werner. And that's the last name of our guest, Alan Werner. As you know, quite frankly, let's get to the basics here. We live in an engineering world, no doubt. If somebody has an idea, it's up to an engineer to make it a reality, from building an airplane to building a building to the shirt on your back. Engineers take those desires and figure it all out. Civil engineers design roads and structures. Aeronautical engineers, of course, design airplanes. Electrical engineers work with electrical power. Chemical engineers work with chemicals. And, of course, train engineers drive trains. That's a whole different ballgame. Mechanical engineers do everything that is left over. The Werner in the question that we pointed out here, VA:Werner, stands for Alan Werner. He is the value-added is his expertise in the field of engineering, specifically mechanical engineering. As a mechanical engineering consultant firm, VA:W has performed mechanical design projects relating to equipment installation, process design, or support structures. Alan's experience and skills range from process industry design to product development, and his expertise spans district energy, plant boilers, pulp and paper, gypsum, wallboard, cement production, food processing, and even brewing. Mechanical engineering is the highest level of problem solving for practical matters, and the problems that exist in the world are infinite, according to Alan. Today, his clients typically are lawyers and insurance companies, and while he has retired from design now, he retains his professional engineering license for the credibility it gives him in his current role as an expert witness. As he points out, his job is to take a situation and to put it into layman's language and to translate that information to the lawyers in a way that they can understand it. It all goes back to the fact that he has skills and experiences that he can still use and apply, and he can bring satisfaction as a result of what he's doing. He's really proud of the results that he can deliver for his clients. It, quite frankly, is the same satisfaction he got as an engineer in creating something for solving problems. So that's a little bit about our story today. We're going to be talking to a highly experienced engineer, civil engineer, and we're going to learn about his experience in the field of engineering and then learn about what it's like to take that experience and use it in a courtroom or use it in a field with a room full of lawyers who are trying to solve a case and successfully process a legal case. So let's join him now. His name again is Alan Werner. He's in Seattle, where it's a cloudy day today, which it's better than rain. You're going to get rain a little bit later today, though. Is that right, Alan?
That is correct. Good afternoon, Doug. Glad to talk with you.
Yes, indeed. Nice to have you with us today. I've kind of set up the situation now, and I want to get into the aspect of you and your experience as an expert witness. But let's go back a little bit to explore your career as an engineer. And I really want to go back and find out what it was in the very beginning. If you can tell me, what persuaded you that this was a field you wanted to go into? When you were a youngster, just getting out of high school, facing, what am I going to do in life? Why did you pick engineering? How did that come about?
Well, before I tell you that, I want to make one correction to your introduction. The website is va-w. I couldn't put a W in there. That's a va-w.net, pro. So va-w pro. Now, why did I get into engineering? My father was a aviation maintenance officer in the Navy. So that's kind of one aspect about that. He was very practical as an individual. We always had a shop around. And I used my hands with this sort of thing. The last 2 years of my high school, I was actually in Japan. My father, again, was a career Navy man. And I just kind of fell into it. This seemed like the natural thing to do. And so I attended Oregon State University and got a mechanical engineering degree. A couple of years later, I got my professional license. Professional license means that I, as an individual, can sell engineering to the public. If you've got a project that you need doing, I have the legal ability to do it. So there are a lot of engineers. Well, take Boeing, for instance. There are a lot of Boeing engineers. Most of them are not professional engineers. There are a few there, but most of them are not because the company covers. But I, as an individual, am a professional engineer, and I'm very proud of that.
When you say, that's interesting. You say most of the engineers at Boeing are not professional engineers. What's the difference between an engineer yourself and an engineer at Boeing? You would think they'd be professional, wouldn't you?
No, it's a fine distinction. I have the same degree as the Boeing engineer. I'm either a bachelor's, master's, or even a doctorate. But
right,
I have taken the 3 years to get it. I have education, I have experience, and I took an exam. It was a two-day exam, 16 hours worth. And I successfully completed those, and the state of Washington gave me a professional engineering license. I subsequently, by comity, got a license in Florida, California, and British Columbia. Now, I've let the other three pretty well go into retirement or lapse, but I've maintained the Washington license as current.
Okay. I was just going to point out, you have a lot of initials after your name. If anybody looks up your background, it's Alan Werner, P-E, and then F period N-S-P-E, comma, P period engineer, PMP credentials. I don't know. That's part of it. But you got a lot of credentials behind you and a lot of study, a lot of credits at the University of Washington, at Seattle University. You're highly trained. Let's just put it that way. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
you have credentials as an engineer, but still,
yes.
I only want to mention this because a lot of people wonder the engineers that are putting together the airplanes that fly from Boeing. I mean, they have credentials too. They are engineers, aren't they? To a degree, for sure.
Well, actually, there's an interesting saying here in Seattle. You don't have to be a professional engineer to design a 747. You do have to be a professional engineer to design the runway it lands on.
Are you true? That's amazing.
That is very, very, very true. Very true.
I'll be damned. Well, I don't want to get into that, but that's a very interesting subject to talk about. Anyway, let's talk about you and when you started. How did you begin your active engineering career? You know,
I started at the Boeing wind tunnel, designing wind tunnel
models. You did?
Yes.
That must have been really amazing.
They were fantastic, but there were two problems there. Number one, if I stayed in the design field at the wind tunnel, pretty soon I'd be typecast. But in 1969, Boeing experienced a freeze. The SST went down, the Dinosaur went down, and a few other things. The company went from 135,000 down to 39,000. Well, as a young engineer, three years to train, I knew that I was prime target for being laid off. So I'll find another career at Pacific Car and Foundry, which fortunately is closer to home. And so during that whole freeze, where other engineers were driving taxi or moved away or did whatever, I worked as a design engineer. I was very, very fortunate.
And what kind of things were you designing? What were you called upon to design?
In this case, it was military engineering, mostly support vehicles and other things, but for the Army. Pacific Car and Foundry had a number of proprietary designs that the Army bought. They did a lot of development engineering. So it was mechanical design.
All right. Was that fun? I mean, are these jobs that you really enjoyed, you got into and had fun doing them? I'm interested in the field itself, you know?
Yes and no. Sometimes the work can be tedious, but the results are very satisfying.
Well, I'm sure of that. No question about that. Give me some of the challenges you faced in those years, those early years.
Well, again, getting experience. When I first started, I didn't know how to do mechanical drafting. I didn't take a course.
Okay.
So I learned on the job and got, actually, to be quite honest, fairly good at it. Now, this was all on vellum by pencil and stuff. Later, the CAD that came in, computer-aided design, and I got into that as well, but that was much later. You have to remember that in the late 60s and 70s, everything was analog. It wasn't digital. It wasn't until the 80s that the digital calculators and other things came on. So I started out with rotary phones and digital design, analog design, excuse me. I correct myself.
Yeah,
analog
design. I hear you. Did you ever go back to Boeing?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. Actually, it wasn't by choice. I was working for a company called Resources Conservation Company, and they had projects mostly in big industrial power plants. And I loved the work there, getting out in the power plants, seeing how they work, just associating with the people. They're very down to earth. But they had a cutback, transferred me laterally over to Boeing. And for the next 5 years, I felt like I was in professional exile. But I had a young family to feed, and so I stuck it out. So I did some work for the short-range attack missile, a very small job there, and I don't remember all the details. Eventually, I transferred over to facilities, which was a little bit closer to what I was doing at. But the way they did it, I preferred to do it some other way. I wanted to take a project from conception to completion, and eventually I was able to do that. For instance, I had one job here in Seattle, a Fisher Flower Company. Now, it's a flour milling company. It's now out of business, but anyway, they took the wheat and ground it, and then in some of the wheat they would bleach with chlorine. Well, why do they do that? Well, that changes the pH of the flour, and it bakes differently than whole wheat.
Right.
But the manager didn't like the way that the chlorine was set up and dispensed. So he hired the company I was working for, and I spent the next 2.5 years making that project going. Did the design. I did the permit applications. I did the construction company bidding and analysis, and then monitored the construction as it went on, and then finally did the startup. So that was a project from conception to completion. That took 2.5 years, mostly because of the permit with the Seattle Fire Department. They didn't like the way we proposed things, and we were trying to avoid money by putting in a piece of equipment that It's rather costly. And eventually we had to do it because the fire department insisted on it. But the way we thought about it was the way we had it set up, we had a safety system, and it was securely the biggest problem with the cylinders, there were two-ton cylinders, by the way, was going down the road to deliver them. That was the greatest hazard that they had. Once they got to the facility, we hooked it up. We had the safety system, and, of course, they were stationary and seismic protected and the whole nine yards. But, you know, again, that was just one illustration of one of the projects that I did that went through the way I wanted to do it.
Well, you've done so many things in a career that lasted some 45 years. And then you retired, as I pointed out. You retired from your active role in the engineering world. And talk to me about how you were approached to become an expert witness for the legal system, for lawyers. How did that come about for you?
Well, I knew about it. I knew that it existed, and I said, well, gee, that's something I can do. So I started putting things together, getting a hold of lawyers and a couple search directories there. There's one called SEAK out of Cape Cod that is probably my best source. So it's listed there along with everybody else, doctors, lawyers, and engineers. And I'm listed under mechanical engineering, and people have called me and said, well, we've got a project going. I've got one project that's going through state court in New Jersey. It involves a handheld steamer to take out wrinkles in clothes. Anyway, this thing tipped over and scalded a young lady, and it's going through court. So I had to do the analysis on it. So they shipped me the unit, and I looked at it, and I tested it, I operated it, et cetera, and found out what the problem was. Then I bought another one that was similar so I could take it apart, what they call exemplar. And then I wrote a report on this, and I sent it back to the lawyer. And like I say, I may be deposed. I may go to court. I don't know. It all depends on what transpires. So that's still active, so to speak.
That's in the works. That's still in the works. Yeah, has not gone to court nor has not been settled yet. You know, it's interesting, being an expert witness in a court case, you don't get that kind of training in school or basically even on the job, your kind of job.
That's
a whole different ballgame, wouldn't you agree?
Right, that is correct. But I'm looking at a book here, the A to Z Guide to Expert Witness. And again, it's put out by SEEK.
You can read a book on it.
What goes on, and, you know, there's a section there called Daubert, D-A-U-B-E-R-T. And it's a way of disqualifying expert witnesses. So you want to avoid that. And you got to know that ahead of time to make certain that you don't answer the questions or give the appearance of conflicts of interest and that sort of thing to get yourself disqualified. Well, it explains that in that book. It also explains the process, reports and depositions and court cases. And, basically it was a primer on how to do this work.
You know, that's very interesting. I hadn't occurred to me that you could accidentally disqualify yourself by something you might say, because obviously you're being brought in by the attorneys. That, number one, they come to you to see if the person they're representing in the trial, could be a company or an individual, I guess, whether they are guilty or not, or what can you do to help convince the jury that the company was correct in what they did, or their client was not wrong, should not be found guilty, right, or shouldn't have to pay money.
That's not my job. My job is to provide facts and opinions about whatever's going on. I've worked mostly for defense.
Give us an example. Give us another example of a case. By the way, you've testified before a jury, right?
That's correct. And I'm going to tell you about that case.
Tell me about that. That's what we want to hear.
That case lasted about a year and a half. And it occurred right here in my own hometown. In fact, the site of the problem was some 7 miles from the house. But a lady had this house, and it happened to be the house of the developer when the area was developed. And he put in all copper piping. Okay, copper's good. But the drain, waste, and vent, the sewer, if you will, happened to be seamed copper. Not seamless, but seamed. so that the copper plate was rolled into a circle and soldered.
Gotcha.
Okay. She had a plug. Well, it happens. So she called a lawyer in, and he came up with a big snake machine, 3/4-inch cable.
She didn't call a lawyer. She called a plumber.
Yeah, she called a plumber, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but, right. You said called a lawyer.
After a couple of years, she and her son noticed an odor. Well, they investigated under the house in the crawl space and found it flooded with sewage. Now, this sounds terrible. I'm glad I didn't have to be there. Anyhow,
right. They
called me in to say what happened. And they had taken out a section to about 4 feet of the section that had split. Unfortunately, the split was at relative to the clock was at 6 o'clock, so it was directly down. If it had been at 12 o'clock, they would have covered it, but it wasn't. So I did some analysis and gave an opinion, and then I got into deposition and by the opposing lawyer, and he said, well, have you ever done a stress calculation? Well, at the time, I said, no. Well, I got back with my lawyer and said, oh, I think I better do this. So I thought about, why would this have done it with a snake or this cable? Well, take a spring like you have on a screen door, fairly light. In fact, I use this in court, and compress it, push it together, and it bows, right? And now imagine that bow spinning around at 160 revolutions a minute. Well, somewhere along, it's going to hit the side of that pipe. And if it hits in the right place, it's going to start putting a stress on that solder seam. So, okay. I did some analysis and got back to my college books on statics, basically stress analysis, worked it up, and the conclusion was that the forces put into the pipe were 1.4 times the allowable stress, the stress induced by the snake. I had to repeat this in court. Apparently, I did. It was pretty complex, but we set up a whiteboard. I showed them the scenario. I showed them how I came about this and what I assumed. And I skipped all the details and came down to the conclusions. And later, they said that apparently I did a very good job. Now, the case was settled by a directed verdict, so I never really got to know what was going on, but I did see it. And when I was on the stand, I felt like I was entertaining and informing at the same time. Fortunately, my lawyer had gone through a script, and so I knew exactly what she was going to come up with, and some of it is a lot like I'm talking to you today. That wasn't my background. Why did I choose mechanical engineering? Where did I go to school? All of these sort of things. Now, when the opposing lawyer came up and cross-testified, he kept saying, well, that welded seam. I said, no, it's a soldered seam. I did that four times. But I didn't know what he was going to ask, so I that was off the cuff. But, again, I would love to do this again. I really felt it was a thrilling experience. So,
did he try and throw you off and get you to say something?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
To confuse you, put it that way.
Yeah. Frankly, Doug, I don't remember all the details except the one I told you, that
kept
calling it a welded seam, and I said, no, it's a soldered seam. During my testimony, my lawyer said, well, why would it break at the seam? Well, I pulled out a couple sheets of toilet paper. I said, here's a very simplistic answer. And I pulled it apart, and, of course, it broke at the perforations. Well,
right.
Perforations represent the seam. The paper itself represents the copper. Well, it got the point across.
Interesting. Do you recall what the lawsuit was really all about? Who was suing what? Who for what?
This lady sued the plumbing company, and for damages and other costs. The problem was my lawyer, the plaintiff lawyer, tried to make this a consumer case, whatever it is, broaden it so we could get damages and expenses. Well, the directed verdict was there was damages, but the way that this lawsuit was set up did not apply. The judge agreed. So that was beyond my scope. I was just sitting in the stands listening to what was going on.
Very, very interesting. So they were trying to prove, I guess, that the manufacturer of the pipe had it was faulty pipe that caused that?
Well, they tried to say it wasn't their fault. They did not go into the the pipe itself. That was not ever a question. But they claimed that they were not responsible. Well, I showed them by analysis that yes, they were responsible. Another witness that actually cleaned up the mess, and he was a construction in his home construction, and a good friend of the plaintiff, told about what happened and how they cleaned it up and that sort of thing. And then I came on a stand to show the engineering side of things.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I'm sure that was quite interesting for you. Now, when you get called into, I know you've worked on a number of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, you've got to do a lot. You have to learn what the basis of the case is, and then do your study into whatever it was that turned out to be a problem that needed your expertise. Right? You got to do your homework.
Oh yeah. Now, my very first case was with a polyethylene shopping bag. It broke, and it dropped the three plus pound can of baked beans on the lady's toe, and she sued the grocery store. Well, I was called
in. Crazy, you know.
Oh yeah, I called in and I said, "Well, analyze this polyethylene bag and tell me what you think." Well, okay, I got a bunch of bags from that grocery company and three others, and so I can compare them. I bought a micrometer to tell the thickness, and I consulted with a lot of people and did analysis, and come to find out, the bottom line was the bag did exactly what. Oh, it was single bag instead of double bag. The bag did exactly what it was supposed to do. If you held it steady, it would hold the contents. This can of beans and a pound of bacon and some other things. But if you tried to lift it, now the can resting on the bottom of the bag with the two ends, round ends, created stress risers in the plastic. And by dynamic loading, it broke. And so I actually did this. I just said, okay, they sent me the same groceries that she bought. So I had that can of beans and a pound of bacon and other things. I put it in there, and I held it. Okay, fine. I lifted it, like to put it on a table, and it broke. Fortunately, my toe was underneath. I knew it was going to happen. So I wrote this out.
I guess the lady was suing for medical damages, right, because it broke her toe. And, and she pinned it on the bag maker. No kidding.
No,
rather than the grocery store.
Probably would have been the bagger behind the teller.
The poor bagger.
Yeah, he used a single bag rather than a double bag.
Oh my God,
she sued the grocery company, and I have a lawyer friend who was not involved. He's just a friend. He said, "Well, you're never going to get any damages from that company." Well, they did.
Wow. Well, that just shows you never know what's going to end up in court. I mean, I've seen a gazillion court cases over my years working with the People's Court, and. That's a new one, quite frankly. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, it's great talking to you, and I know this is a fascinating aspect of your life, because you never know what kind of case you're going to be called in to provide expert testimony on. But it just you're an example of someone who retired from a career and then discovered that, look, there are a lot more uses for my knowledge and my background that can be of great benefit to others, and you're capitalizing on that. So I give you a lot of credit, Alan. Good for you.
Well, it keeps me off the street during the day, so yeah.
No kidding, yeah, I understand what you mean. Alan Werner is our guest. I want to get your website correct again, Alan. It's va-w.pro, correct?
Correct, .pro.
All right, I'm going to give it again.
va-pro.
All right, va-w.pro.
.pro.
va-w.pro. All right, everybody. We're out of time for today. Alan Werner in Seattle. Listen, enjoy yourself and your career as an expert witness. Obviously, you know your stuff, and you can provide what's needed for the attorneys.
Right.
So thank you, sir, and congratulations.
One last thought here, Doug. Okay.
Yep.
Well, thanks for talking to me.
You got 30 seconds.
Okay. Basically, I have to take a complex subject, maybe a technical subject, and translate it into layman's language. Yeah, make
it
simple. But accurate.
I get you.
That's what I do.
Okay, sir.
I have that talent. Okay. Thanks for the call.
Great chatting with you. Thank you very much. And that'll wrap it up. Edition of Close Up Talk Radio, everybody. We'll see you next time. Take care. Okay? Till then, be safe. Bye for now.